Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivaradhari Yashoda Nandana Vraja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Gopinatha Radha, Gopinatha Radhe Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai, Jaya Gaura Nitai Jaya Shri Gopal, Shri Gopal, Shri Gopal, Jaya Shri Gopal. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Gurudev, 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 Gurudev. जय विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिवृजकाचार्य स्तोत्र तशी श्रीमदेश एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। रामाचार्य श्री हरिदास ठाकुर की जय। प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण से कन्या प्रभु नित्यानंद श्रद्वैत राधा शिवा श्री गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गोप गोपीना श्याम कुंज राधा कुंजरी गोवर्धन की जय। वृंदावन मथुरा धाम की जय। नवदीप मायापुर धाम की जय। जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की जय। गंगा मई की जय। यमुना मई की जय। भक्ति देवी की जय। तुलसी देवी की जय। सामवेद भक्त वृंद की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू असेंबल डिवोटीज। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री गुरु एंड श्री गौरव। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। We read today from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Chapter entitled The Son of Drona Punished, Text number 40. Please repeat after me. Suta Uvacha. एवं परीक्षता धर्मम् पार्थ कृष्णेन चोदित नैच्छद्धन्तुं गुरु सुतम् यद्याप्यात्महनं महान्। सूत उवाच एवं परीक्षता धर्मम् पार्थ कृष्णेन चोदित नैच्छद्धन्तुं गुरु सुतम् यद्याप्यात्महनं महान्। सूत उवाच एवं परीक्षता धर्मम् पार्थ कृष्णेन चोदित नैच्छद्धन्तुं गुरु सुतम् यद्यप्यात्महनं महान्। एवं परीक्षिता धर्मकृष्णचोदिता नैच्छद्धन्तुं गुरु सुतम् यद्याप्यात्महनमहाूत उवाच एवं परीक्षता धर्मम् पार्थकृष्णेन चोदित नैच्छद्धन्तुं गुरु सुतम् यद्याप्यात्महनं महान्। सूत सूत उवाच एवं परीक्षता धर्मम् पार्थकृष्णेन चोदित नैच्छद्धन्तुं गुरु सुतम् यद्याप्यात्महनं महान्। सूत उवाच एवं परीक्षता धर्मम् Nāikṣadhāntaṁ guru sutam yadyakātmahanam Mataji Suta uvāca evam parikṣitā dharmam Pārta Krishnena chodita Nāikṣadhāntaṁ guru sutam Yadya Pyatmahanam Mahan Suta Uvacha Evam Parikshita Dharmam Parsa Krishnena Chodita Naichadantum Guru Sutam Yadya Pyatmahanam Mahan Suta?
Suta.
Suta Goswami.
Suta Goswami.
Uvacha.
Uvacha.
Said.
Said.
Evam.
Evam.
This.
This.
Parikshata.
Parikshata.
Being examined.
Being examined.
Dharmam.
Dharmam.
In the matter of duty.
The matter of duty.
Partha.
Partha.
Shri Arjuna.
Shri Arjuna.
Krishnena.
Krishnena.
By Lord Krishna.
By Lord Krishna.
Chodita. Being encouraged.
Being encouraged.
Na aichat.
Did not like.
Hantum.
To kill.
Guru Sutam.
The son of his teacher.
Yadyapi.
Although.
Atmahanam. Murderer of sons.
Mahan.
Very great. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Translation. Suta Goswami said, although Krishna, who was examining Arjuna in religion, encouraged Arjuna to kill the son of Dronacharya, Arjuna, a great soul, did not like the idea of killing him. Although Ashwatthama was a heinous murderer of Arjuna's family members. Purport. Arjuna was a great soul undoubtedly, which is proved here also. He is encouraged herein personally by the Lord to kill the son of Drona. But Arjuna considers that the son of his great teacher should be spared. For he happens to be the son of Dronacharya, even though he is an unworthy son. Having done all sorts of heinous acts whimsically for no one's benefit. Lord Shri Krishna encouraged Arjuna outwardly just to test Arjuna's sense of duty. It is not that Arjuna was incomplete in the sense of his duty, nor was Lord Shri Krishna unaware of Arjuna's sense of duty. But Lord Shri Krishna put to test many of his pure devotees just to magnify the sense of duty. The gopis were put to such tests as well. Prahlad Maharaj also was put to such a test. All pure devotees come out successful in the respective tests by the Lord. Om Ajnan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam, Savadhutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishnena Chaitanyam Devam, Shri Radha Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Shri Vishakhanvitamsa, E Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dina Bandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Saptakanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Vaevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare
Hare Hare Krishna. So in this chapter, we have read in the previous few verses, we know the story of the Mahabharata and how it ended. This is at the final, this is after the war is ended actually. And 18 days are over, the Kurus were decisively killed. Even the on the Pandava side, practically most of the people were dead. And Ashwatthama, as an act of revenge, commits an act which is, you know, even beyond Kaliyug's worst actions today would be considered abnormally, really, really bad. Because in those days, even the Kurus, they had certain standards of morality or a certain etiquette of war. Like they would not fight in the evenings or they would in the nights. They would not fight somebody who was asleep or somebody who is on the ground. A few times of exceptions and by and large people followed. So what to speak of such an act when Ashwatthama comes in the night and slaughters the five innocent sons out of an act of revenge, because his father Dronacharya was killed while he had gone into meditation. So this is the background, and in the previous few verses we see that Krishna himself is actually telling Arjun that, you know, this is he's a murderer. You know, he has not listened to his own guru, and by any standards you should kill him. So you should kill him immediately. He doesn't even say request him, kill him immediately. So we face some many times when a situation is so obvious, like if Arjuna had gone and killed Ashwatthama, not a single person would have felt that that is abnormal. That would have been considered most normal, considering the background of what had happened. And they would not have attributed it to revenge on the part of Arjuna. They would have said this is what had to be done. It was a sense of duty. Even that also Krishna mentions, that it's a duty to kill him. But in spite of Krishna telling him, Arjuna starts thinking, and his thinking is that his guru Dronacharya is dead. Dronacharya's wife Kripi, means he had such respect for them. He says she's a mother. So what happens if I kill Ashwatthama? She will be suffering in old age. So instead of thinking that I have to kill him at any cost, he's seeing the effects of what happens if he kills this person, however unworthy he was to live. So Prabhupada talks very nicely. He said that Krishna is an impartial observer. So he's been testing him. The word parikshata, being examined, is mentioned in the verse. So we will have many tests like this when everything is so obvious that we should do it. And we'll see many examples of devotees who have given their own thoughts, introspection, and decided what to do to see the effect of their actions. So it doesn't minimize Ashwatthama's offenses. He was a criminal, that was no doubt about it. But the point is that even if there is a duty, we have to see the effect of the duty. A devotee should not be blind to the effects of duty.
whatever is done. And sometimes it suits us to say that, well, it's my duty and I should do it. Also because we know that it gives us, maybe sometimes. But irrespective, we have to consider, we have to do our duties, but there will be times, maybe rare times, when perhaps the sense of the duty has to be weighed against the implications of the effect that may happen, and we have to give a pause to that. A humorous example is one of Srila Prabhupada's leading disciples, Badrinarayan Prabhu, now is Badrinarayan Maharaj. So he mentions once they were on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada, and the usual pattern was Prabhupada would walk very fast, and there may be 8-10 devotees so were walking with him. Sometime Prabhupada would pause and then speak something, and then they would all, you know, crowd around him. So suddenly they were walking in, I think it was Los Angeles, so they were going through the very rich neighborhood of these huge mansions and almost palace-like sizes. So he suddenly stopped, and then he used to have a cane. So he pointed to one of the houses and said, someday we will have a mansion like this. So, you know, all the those devotees, they crowded on Prabhupada. They said, Jai Prabhupada. You know? So then they resumed walking. And then after some time, they saw a huge stretch limousine. We are not used to seeing it in India, but a limousine is a car, a luxury car. But stretch limousine is, if you've seen, say, a very luxury car here, the stretch limousine would be probably at least twice the size, 2.5 times the size, huge one. You know, so probably if you sit in the car and if you sneeze, you might hear your own echo. It's so big, you know. So it's a sign of luxury. People use that, you know, then maybe very, very rich people, they may use that. So it looks very odd because there are only two in the front and two, but then in the middle, the section is probably several dozens of feet. So a car went back and Prabhupada just pointed his cane and said, someday we'll have a car like that. Again, all the devotees, Badrinarayan Prabhu, they covered and said, Jai Prabhupada. Again, they resumed walking, and then after some time, there was a huge dog, Doberman Pinscher, you know, maybe almost 5 feet tall, you know, and then he was going, and Prabhupada just stopped and said, someday we'll have a dog like that. Then he said, Jai Srila Prabhupada. And Prabhupada said, you fools, why should we have a dog? So he was testing them. He said, why do you have to say Jai to everything? You know? So sometimes our intent is to please and the spiritual master, please the Vaishnavas, but you have to use our mind. And Prabhupada was testing them. So we can't just blindly do that. Otherwise, our credibility also will be lost. So devotee, a pure devotee is one who is, you know, he will act in such a way that he covers all the areas, and nobody can criticize him for being, for neglecting or for being callous or for being avoiding his duties and also giving a full thought. Even though his roles may have changed now. For instance, there is in Raghunath Das Goswami, who one of the greatest of Acharyas, one of the six Goswamis who got direct instructions from Srila Prabhupada and who had such a leading role to play, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and who Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him, he put him directly under Sarva Damodar Goswami, who was the assistant to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, in his story, he was actually born to a very, very multi-millionaire family because his father and uncle were zamindars. So when Raghunath Das Goswami was young, that time he was just Raghunath. He was not into the movement and had not met Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at that time. So once the Nawab, you know, the tax collection in that state, there was some dispute between the minister of that state and Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle. So apparently there was some 12 lakhs, they were raising revenues to the extent of 12 lakhs, and some Nawab got 4 lakhs. And then the Nawab's men came, the minister, he personally saw to it that he sent people to arrest Raghunath Das Goswami's father and uncle. So both the father and uncle, they fled from that place. So Raghunath was just a young boy. He was grown up, so he took over, and then he handled the matter in such a sensitive way that he resolved the issue. The minister was pleased, the father was pleased, everything was settled. So he demonstrated, his tact, diplomacy, concern to find a solution. So a devotee is one who will want to find a solution and will know where to look for, whom to ask for. So one of the 26 qualities of Vaishnava is called Daksha, he's expert. So pure devotee is one where you may not see him that well. Maybe he didn't develop this gadget. That is not the point. But if he had to, hypothetically, he will know how to go about it and whom to tell. So they know where to take help and what is important. They will see the relevance also. So Prabhupada would mention often that Krishna is so beautiful, Krishna is to be taken care of. But that doesn't mean that only the deity is to be taken care of. Krishna is on the altar, so you take care of him, but you leave the courtyard open. Supposing you leave the temple courtyard open, the thieves come in and steal, then that is not service. So you have to take care of a complete service. Not just the Krishna on the altar, but Krishna's place. Everything around that, all services included. So Krishna knew, of course, that what Arjuna was thinking. And in spite of that, he was testing him to see how he would, of course, for the benefit of mankind, but also to make the point that, that we will all get our exams, and these exams are not the way we normally appear for our academic exams. Here, it is not an intellect, not a matter of, memorizing. It's more a matter of understanding the heart and behaving in a way which is consistent with Vaishnava principles. So, here in this case, there will be tolerance because Arjuna had to, there's a description of how the anger that he felt. It was not that he was, he felt complete, his heart melted. His eyes were red like copper. He was, when he heard this and he dragged him, he got him, and except for killing him, then eventually we'll see how they, kill him, but don't kill him. Not physically, but in such a way that in the Kshatriya code, it was like death. But so that was where the application of the mind and the intelligence also took over. So tolerance was there. There's a compassion, humility, determination. These matters would be helpful when we pass the test. So there will be, in this case, we have seen that in Arjuna's case, this was a situation where the whole world at that time and posterity would have said, that whatever, if he had gone ahead and killed Ashwatthama, would have said, fine, this was normal, this is like war. Now nobody questions when, in the Kurukshetra war, when somebody, when the Pandavas killed some soldier or some general, whoever he was, it was considered normal. So what to speak of when somebody who was not even, he had done a criminal act like this. In spite of that, when they don't do what is considered so-called normal, but going by the highest levels of religion and the principles of Vaishnavism. So let's examine a few other examples of some of the devotees who also have been tested in similar situations. And these can be moments, it is not like it's going to be entire long periods. You just so unless you are living a certain life, when a decisive moment comes, we may or may not, we would not even know that we are being tested. In the case of Vibhishan, in Ramayana, we know that he was always even though he was in a demoniac family, a brother of Ravan, but nevertheless he was a devotee, and he had the courage to stand up and speak against the abduction of Sita. He knew. And then when finally, when Hanumanji came and they were about to kill, Hanumanji allowed himself to be captured, after he destroyed the Ashok Vatika after meeting Sitaji. At that time Ravan was so enraged that he was going to kill Hanumanji. And Vibhishan stood up and stopped him and said that, he reminded him on the courts of principle, he said, you will be You are a king, and if you kill a messenger, that will be the worst thing. So Ravan's ego did not permit him to do that. So he set his tail on fire. But later on, when the Setu bridge was also built, and they came over, the army came over, and the war was going to happen the next day, and they were already Ram and all the millions of hundreds of millions of soldiers, I mean the monkey soldiers had come over, and they camped on the banks of the sea, on the shores of the sea. At that time, when Ravan had convened this meeting in the court, again the Vibhishan stood up and said that I would say stop the war because you all will be killed. You know, he is Lord Ram, and please, why do you? He begged his brother. Now he was the only person standing up. There were very powerful generals, his own brothers and nephews and others were also against. And he knew that it was almost certain death. Ravan could have killed him there and then. And anyway, the war was going to start. Somehow Ravan told him to, just throw him out, physically, literally threw him out. And then we know how Vibhishan came to Lord Ram and surrendered. And Lord Ram accepted him. So that was his moment of truth. You know, if he had not spoken up, very few would have said it. They would have said, well, that was, like Mandodari, for instance. Now, she spoke up, she tried to advise Ravan behind the scenes. She did what she could. And then she paid the penalty when she the price when she found that her husband eventually was killed. And, she also understood that what he did was wrong. But in this case, Vibhishan publicly spoke out and went down in history. We are speaking about him how many ages later, millions of years, and it will be for eternity. And he was not doing it for the future. He was doing it because it was right. He knew the consequences of such. So, that flash of a moment, he had to take the call and he did it. So this is something we learn from that that courage doesn't come just immediately. It is not like adrenaline flows and we, like sometimes we hear stories about very stirring stories of something on the war front. Even now, somebody say in Kashmir, or they're going out to terrorists and some people, bravely some of the soldiers may be martyred. So it's it moves the heart, and, we may feel, I would like to do this, I would do that, which is a nice feeling. But it is not a feeling. This is something which is a conviction, which is part of his DNA, part of his life, where, and then when it is tested, it comes out. And he was a devotee through and through. Similarly, Dhruv Maharaj. Dhruv Maharaj's case was slightly different, where he was only 5 years old. He went to the forest because he was so upset and angry because of the way his stepmother treated him. But when he went there, and Narad Muni, in a sense, tested him, and Dhruv Maharaj, though he was 5, but he was so resolved. So he went to the forest, he did the tapasya. When he did the tapasya, then Lord Vishnu comes in front of him. Lord Vishnu comes in front of him, and puts the conch shell on his head also, and tells him, what do you want? Now, Dhruv Maharaj's desire was to have a kingdom greater than his father. He had that kind of, that's the reason he went there. But when Lord Vishnu came in front of him, again, if he had said that, my Lord, this is what I want, Krishna's asking, like Krishna's telling Arjun what to do, nobody would have said that, oh, how can you do this? No, we would have said, it's natural and normal. But after seeing Vishnu, Vaishnav qualities, being the highest, most exemplary, pure devotee, he said, he compared his earlier desire as broken pieces of glass. He said, compared to what I was thinking, it's just because there is no value. So he said, I don't want anything. So, nobody was there to stop, not even the Lord. It's not a question of not stopping. They were encouraging, please take. Similarly, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela, we heard the story of Kolavecha Sridhar, who was a very, very poor banana leaf seller. He was hardly making anything. So poor, it is described that he was staying in a small hut, which also had a big hole in the hut, and he had nothing in the hut, practically. The only thing he had was one tin water, a tin pot, kind of, which had a broken handle and it was dented in many places, and he was using it for everything, for cooking, for his, you know, washing, bathing, everything was that kind of, that poverty he had. And he was earning a little bit by just selling banana leaves. But whatever he would get from those, whatever little he got, he would give half of it to for worship of the Ganges. So he was such a simple person, and he was contented. In this poverty he was contented. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Nimai as a young boy. He would go every time past him, and every day he had one routine that he would want to go and harass, so-called harass Kolavicha Sridhar. And he would go and say, okay, how much are you charging? And he would say, and as it is, he was charging, he was such a simple person, he was not a businessman. So he was charging hardly anything, 2 pais or 3 pais. And he's saying, oh, you're making so much profit, how much are you charging? I'm not going to give you anything. This was a daily routine. He would take one or two cup leaves and say, this is too much. And Kolavicha Sridhar would say, okay, no, no, Nimai, how? This is the lowest, so go and see elsewhere, I can't, I'm charging you the lowest. So no, 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 you're charging too much. Now, but at the, and that was the kind of everyday routine. So it looked externally as a kind of a pressure, a harassment for anybody else would be seeing that Kolavicha Sridhar was being, you know, as it is, he's poor, and in that also somebody is kind of, we might find that some hard bargainers also on our streets here, no? That is normal, I think. To see and to probably participate in that also. You know, everyone likes to negotiate and so on. But on the night of the Mahaprakash, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was revealing the greatness of many of the devotees and also who he himself was, only that one night, he called for Kolavicha Sridhar. At first they didn't know, they meant, you meant him? And then he said, no, no, call him. And Kolavicha Sridhar was brought in. He didn't know what was happening. He came in a daze. He was there. And then he said, you know, you tell me what you want. I'll give you anything you want. Anything means you can have islands and, you know, mansions, whatever. Because your sincerity has won over my heart. And Kolavicha Sridhar kept saying, I don't want anything. I don't want anything. In spite of his poverty, he could have asked for something. He said, no, I don't want. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, no, I have to give you something, you have to tell me. Then he said, finally, he said, if you must want my Lord, then grant me this boon, that life after life, after life, I will always be a banana seller, and you will come as Nimai to my, you know, to buy this and, you know, try to negotiate with me. So it was an ecstasy for him. Because whenever he saw Nimai, he was feeling such love for him, such ecstasy, because he was the Lord. And only a pure devotee would recognize that. And so therefore, all the seeming actions externally of the kind of pressures and, you know, tensions that may have been there, they were not, he never felt that because he was so contented. But he actually just loved spending time with him, dealing with him. So when the time came for him, the moment, he didn't even know why he was called. And he came, he was pressurized in front of everyone, said, you have to ask. What he asked for was, please give me that, give me that situation again, every life after life. Now, when you ask something in front of the Lord, it is not like that I'll ask something, but I'm hoping that he knows me and he'll give me what I want. No, this is the final thing. This is, I want that. And that's my ultimate, that's it. I don't want anything more. And therefore, if at the depth of his heart, you know, peeling over all the desires and going to the bottom of his heart, if that is what is there, you know, that is the character of Kolavicha Sridhar. So he was right from the beginning, consistently a devotee, externally whether he's poor or rich, didn't matter. And here we are taking this case because he was of extreme poverty. And even devotees would make fun of him, you know. I mean, it was like his one tin pot was so dented in so many places. Nothing, but it didn't bother him. He was in a different world because he was not affected by the material levels. Also, Parikshit Maharaj, through whom we are hearing the Bhagavatam, and he's become eternally immortal in that sense. Also, same situation where he was a king of the universe. He wasn't a king of one of the provinces of India or even of a country. And nowadays, there are no kings who have the power. There was, the monarchy was full, or they had the complete authority. And still he had a, Parikshit Maharaj was ruling so well, and that too what his lineage was. He was grandson, right, of Arjun? Grandson. So that kind of lineage, you know, so close to you know, to Krishna himself, and Krishna protected him also when he was in the womb. And then he, and then just due to one mistake, you know, when he was thirsty and he was in the forest and he didn't get, and he saw one sage was meditating and he didn't reply to him, so he kind of misunderstood, and out of anger, he just threw a dead snake at him. And that snake was around his neck. And he went away. And that, the rishi was not affected by it. But his son, Sringi, was only 12 years old. But being a Brahmin son, he had the powers. And he comes there and he sees. And he was so upset that my father is meditating. Who's this person? So he just takes some water and gives the curse that whoever has done this will die in 7 days from now with a snake bite. Now this was destined. Krishna wanted it. It was arranged accordingly. But from Parikshit Maharaj's point of view, when he came to know this, that this is the curse that has come to him, he could have easily countered it. If he wanted, he could have gone and made his case to the... Because the sage was very upset, the father. When he came to know, and he really got so angry at his son, Sringi, saying, "Do you know, such a great personality, such an amazing king, he's been ruling so well, so compassionately. For this, and the son also, you know, he was only 10, 12 years old, so he made a completely immature decision, totally without impulsive thinking. So the sage was already in the mood to forgive him. He could have come and said that, you know, I made a mistake, I'm so sorry. He said, fine, forget it, the curse would have gone. But and everyone would have said that is normal. You know, means he went there and it was a mistake. No, it was not appropriate punishment given. But he went, he took this as Krishna's guidance to him, that now the time for him has come to retire. He didn't contest it at all. Immediately, without a second, he didn't have to pack his bags, open his cupboard, take out his suitcase, put some things, nothing. Straight left from there to the banks of all the sages of Naimisharanya all the sages were there, the banks of the were gathered there, and Sukhdev Goswami was elected to speak to him for the 7 days, and all the greatest of great demigods and these rishis, virtually all the who's who of the spiritual world, they all came there to hear for all the 7 days. So and he accepted it, his fate so effortlessly. So we could see that this kind of reaction doesn't come overnight. Parikshit Maharaj was externally a king. He was living in grandeur. He had his duties must have been 20 hours a day's duties, you know, and must be with all his intellect and with all his power. He must be considering every corner and every work to see, and everybody was so happy. You're protecting dharma in the highest way. So seemingly not like he was meditating like the sage. But when the time came, because whatever he did was only for Krishna, and he never ever forgot what his role is, and that he is always a servant of the servant, so that when the time came, he took the decision immediately. And another example of our contemporary times, because we can relate to that, you know, Srila Prabhupada's one disciple, Ladini Mataji. So she was only 30, 35, though she was born in America, but she had a very, very strong desire, very compassionate heart. She wanted to serve the ones who were underprivileged particularly. And being born as a white woman, and we are talking of in the 80s, she spent almost 7-8 years in Africa. And that too not in the relatively more developed eastern part like Kenya or Tanzania, but actually where on the western side, you know, where there was depth of poverty. So she was assisting Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami. So you can imagine a single white lady, white-born skinned lady, in America, in Africa, going to the villages, talking to them, and she was very comfortable, and she used to carry her DTs. She had come to India, she's come to our temple here. This was in 1980s, 88, 89. And then the situation came when in Liberia, there was a coup where the government, which was actually, was overthrown, and there was a power, there was a Prince Johnson who was actually controlling the territory. And they got very upset at, initially they were supporting the devotees because devotees were just giving free distribution of food. But because Prince Johnson was very demoniac, he was killing people, shooting people and all that. So, you know, she actually was so simple that she actually wrote a letter to him saying that, you know, you, quoting from Shastra and saying that you should not be indulging in this. You have so much power, you can do so much good. And he was so enraged that he said, now I have to kill these devotees. So he came personally with several of his people with machine guns and all, in a simple house where there were about 10, 12 devotees, rounded the Dhamma and took them to the bank of a river nearby. And one eyewitness was there who actually later on gave the story what happened. So there were two ladies and about eight men. And then, so he said that, okay, I'm not going to kill the ladies. So he said, you step aside. So he lined up all the eight men and they were all facing, and they knew they were going to be, the hands were tied and they were going to be shot dead. And this, he was about to shoot Prince Johnson with his machine gun. And Ladini Mataji, now here again, if she had just kept aside, she may have been alive, she would have been, who knows, she would have been free, probably. But she was so angry and so upset that this person is killing devotees, that for her, protecting devotees, and what kind of protection she could give? She was defenseless, she didn't have any guns, she was a lady, she didn't have physical power. And here was a, you know, demon, ferocious person who had so many, there were a couple of dozen armed guards with him, and they were all facing. So she just before he was pulling the trigger, she actually came and took the gun and said, you can't shoot devotees, you can't shoot devotees. And then he shot her and he shot all the men. Only that other lady, a black body lady, she escaped, or she survived. So, and then they saw her, you know, sari was floating in the river and all that. So, so now she had that one momentary decision to make, and she just acted the way she has lived the whole life. That is to serve devotees, to protect devotees. That is the value for her in the life. So whatever we don't look at and say, okay, oh, this is my last moment. That is not the thing is, we just do what we do, what is most important in our life. And if we bring these priorities only come if we are convinced and if we are leading that life. Otherwise, it will never come. We can't, it is not a theoretical thing that I will read Bhagavatam every day and I'll memorize the shlokas and I'll say that this is the most important, and it helps. But ultimately, we will have to make choices. And we are anyway making choices. So in those choices, are we doing the right things? Are we trying, and if we make mistakes, are we amending mistakes? This is where the test will come. So same in the Pandavas, you know, we see in this situation where Arjuna was, we are seeing at the end, but how did this, you know, they were, Kunti Mataji and Pandavas, the kind of life they led, I mean, we can't even see a parallel of it anywhere here. Continuous, in spite of being living in such a wonderful atmosphere and being so close to Bhishma and the very great personalities, they were also so accomplished, everybody loved them. But they were deprived and there was so much injustice and there were so many attempts to kill. And Krishna was so close to them. Krishna was so close to them, and his best friend, Krishna's best friend was Arjuna, and Krishna loved the Pandavas more than anything else in the world, anybody else in the world, and he was so often with them. His own sister Subhadra was married to Arjuna. You know, just that closeness was there. But never did Pandavas ever say that, Krishna, you are a friend. Can you do something about it? Why are we suffering? Or never saying that, you know, Krishna, why is this happening to us? You know, you can, not even implying, not even a single time. They accepted it. In fact, in Queen Kunti's prayers, why she's glorified, is that after everything is over, and when the Yudhishthira Maharaj has been crowned the king of the emperor of the whole world, the Rajasura sacrifice is complete, and then Krishna, everything is over, and now he's anointed the king, and Krishna is going back to Dwarka, and when he's leaving, Queen Kunti is his aunt, so that means, you know, he's his nephew, so you know, you can say in terms of biological hierarchy also, he's a junior. But that's the time when she really weeps and she says, you know, okay, let the calamities come again and again in our lives. She's requesting that let the calamities come, because only when the calamities come, we remember you. So she was now very sad because he's leaving them. So that for them was the ultimate in terms of pain, in terms of sorrow. Not the difficulties that they went through. They went through that. And they, of course, Krishna being there gave them the support. In the Akshay Patra time also, you know, when Durvasa Muni incident happened, he was there to help. Draupadi was being the most humiliating act ever, you know, and they're trying to molest her. Krishna comes in the form of the sari. He helps. But they've never asked, and what was their reaction when even now, when they could have killed Ashwatthama, they just let him go. So why we get these examples, why we read Bhagavatam, why we, you know, hear from the pure devotees, from advanced devotees, you know, we are constantly hearing from Prabhupada and his disciples, is because we not only we are here from the from our ears, but we also hear from our heart, wherein we try to absorb and try to see if we can live that, you know, try to put it into our life. And see where we can correct the mistakes we made, or we may be able to take better decisions in future. So this is how Krishna actually gives us shelter. If we turn to Krishna, everything becomes auspicious. And even in sometimes most inauspicious things, apparently inauspicious things, he makes it completely auspicious if we turn to him. If we take the story of Jambavan, Jambavan was a most extraordinarily amazing historical figure. Jambavan was, he was born from the yawning of Lord Brahma. So Lord Brahma yawned and Jambavan came. And he was not only in the Ramayana, he was also in the Mahabharata. And so you can imagine he was one of the two or three people who could live millions of years. We're talking of entire eons away. Also, he was playing the bugle when Lord Brahma was washing the feet of Lord Vamandev, when Lord Vamandev had pierced the universe, and you know, at the time of the Ganges came. So he was there. Those were his glories. And what to speak of in the Ramayana, we know Jambavan was the mentor of Hanumanji, best friend and mentor of Hanumanji. He's the one who reminded Hanumanji that you are the one who can, you have forgotten your strength because you are cursed that way. But I'm just, somebody has to remind you. And you can jump and come back, and you don't know your own capacity. And that awakens in Hanuman the understanding that he can do that. And of course, he is a very intimate friend of Lord Ram. Very, very intimate, close associate of Lord Ram. Now, such a personality, also in the when Krishna was, in this story of Shyamantaka Jewel, when Krishna was running, chasing this, he wanted to give this, means the jewel was taken by the brother of Jambavan, brother of Shatrajit, King Shatrajit, Prasena. And then Prasena was killed by a lion. And then that lion, the jewel was so precious, you know, it can churn out gold after gold, I mean, any amount of gold. So it was not a normal jewel. But it should not be misused. So after Prasena was killed, then Jambavan was there, and Jambavan just took the, he was so powerful, he was probably the most powerful person, he knew he was the most powerful person in the entire world at that time. He just killed the lion easily with his bare hands, and he took that, and he gave it to his son, because his son wanted to play with the, so he was attached to his son. And he was attached to the jewel because the jewel was making the sun happy. It was a plaything. So they were in a cave. And the cave was dark. So when Krishna came looking for the jewel, and Jambavan did not recognize Krishna. So he didn't recognize that this is his own Lord Ram. And then when Krishna took away the jewel from the son, and the nurse was there, she screamed, and then Jambon came, he was very angry, and then he fought with Krishna. And the fight went on for 28 days and nights. Every moment, they didn't stop for even a moment. There was no break. It was every day, it was moment to moment. It was only after 28 days that he weakened and he was beaten badly by that time. Then he realized that this was Lord, this is my Lord, Lord Ram. Had he known, he would never have done that. And then his anger completely went away. So Prabhupada gives this point that, you know, why took 28 days for him to recognize such a great personality as Jambavan? He said, till we hold attachment, attachment turns to leads to anger when something is taken away, when we don't get what we want. So this anger and attachment, till it's there, we'll never recognize Krishna. So even today, we may say, we'll come to the temple, we may hear, we may do this, but you know, if we have strong attachments, and then that leads to anger because we see it, you know, if we see Krishna consciousness as a separate compartmentalized thing, that it is my regular ritual, I must do my 2 hours round, I must come to a temple, I must do this, I'm just crossing the boxes, ticking the boxes, that attitude will only make us, I mean, go to some extent. But what we read from the others, what we learn from the others is that they, it becomes a part of their life, and it's not easy. I mean, I'm saying this because I know we know these stories, but the challenge is, I know that there are so many painful situations which we cannot avoid. So in this case, in Jambavan, because he had the attachment, till that time, he could not see. Minute he became weak and he was beaten, and he recognized, as soon as his ego went, the minute he recognized his, it became gratitude. His anger became gratitude, and he immediately gave the jewel, and he even gave his daughter Jambavati. So Jambavati was an exceptional princess, and you know, and he was, though he was, Jambavan was attached to his son, but he was more attached to his daughter. And therefore he gave the most precious thing in his life, which was his daughter Jambavati, to Krishna. So she was one of the principal queens. So even here we see that even if you see the lives of the queens, you know, see the Rukmini, we know the story of, we just not talked of this Jambavati. You know, in what circumstances she, because she was seeing her own father being beaten 28 days, you know, for and seeing, she knew that he was one of the biggest personalities of the entire universe. and seeing in her front of her own eyes and the difficulties. And then, of course, her desire to serve Krishna was very much there, because, of course, she was an exceptional, she was an expansion of the, Radharani. So they're not on the normal level as we consider. But they go through all these, when they take this situation, when they take the appearance here, just for us to understand that everybody, in everyone's life, if they stay, live by the sincerity, then Krishna can turn the worst into the best. Like in worst situation, inauspicious can become auspicious. So we may think it's inauspicious, but Krishna makes it auspicious. Just because he tells us to do the right things. I mean, if we are sincerely following that. So in Jambavati's case, going through this, similarly Rukmini's case, we know how she was suffering through, she wanted to marry Krishna, and her brother Rukmi, and supported by Jarasandh, who was so envious of Krishna, because Jarasandh's two daughters were widowed, because they were also killed, and Jarasandh tried 17 times to kill Krishna. So he had such revenge, and he was also one of the most powerful people in the world, and he was trying to kill. So he instigated and he arranged and helped Rukmi to see that Rukmini is given to Shishupal. And you know, can you imagine what life she must be leading, that not only she was being deprived to go to Krishna, but on the other side, you couldn't think of someone worse, the worst choice in the world, because Shishupal's existence really revolved around hating Krishna. His only motive seemed to be that he just wanted to curse and blaspheme Krishna. So staying with such a person would have been unthinkable. So the kind of anxieties and tensions we can't even begin to imagine. And then that situation also changed overnight. And then, but it didn't, it also went through a lot of difficulties because, so-called difficulties, because Krishna kidnapped her and then had to fight. But then he came and he and Balram stopped all the opposing warriors, and including her brother. And Krishna spared her brother because it is Rukmini's brother. But that's the story. When Draupadi asked all of them, you know, or the queens, about the story when they went to meet Krishna. Everyone had a story. Rukmini, even Satyabhama. It was the same story of Shyamantaka Jewel, where I talked of Satrajit, whose brother Prasena was killed. So Satrajit was really, you can say, the villain in the beginning, who was very greedy and who was actually spreading lies about Krishna. You know, because he, but finally when, you know, saying that so many wrong things about Krishna, but, you know, and Satyabhama was the daughter of Satrajit. But when Satrajit actually finally, you know, when after the Jambavan was defeated and Krishna brought back, Satrajit felt guilty and he was very apologetic and he confessed and all that. So Krishna forgave him. Krishna said, that's fine. You know, doesn't Krishna give so much respect to Jambavan? Immediately, that is the other thing, that Krishna completely changed his attitude, because once you surrender to Krishna, like the same hands which were beating Jambavan were now massaging his feet, and you know, he gave him so much respect as his father-in-law and all. And same with Satrajit, who was really the instigator of the problem initially. Krishna gave the jewel to him, he gave Satyabhama in hand to Krishna. So of the Krishna's queens, Satyabhama and Jambavati came through this. Rukmini also had this. Even Queen Mitravinda, one of the other queens, in her Swayamvar also, there were so many difficulties. And when Krishna came, they opposed him. There was a big battle. Even Satya, who also had one of the other queens, she also had to undergo a lot of the challenges. And so many of these queens had the same similar problem. So we only see from the outside that the queens are with Krishna, they're so fortunate. What to speak of the 16,000 queens? They were stolen by this Bhaumasur. And Bhaumasur is the son of Bhumi. You know, Mother Bhumi is worshipped by all. And he turned out to be such an extraordinarily powerful demon. Not just even by the strong physical standards of demons, he was even more powerful than that. That nobody could conquer him. And he had kidnapped the 16,000. Krishna freed them. And then, so you can imagine the plight of the 16,000 princesses. They were innocent. They were captured. Now, after being released, who would marry them? Because, you know, in those days, they said, okay, the chastity levels were so high that if, you know, if the girl has been touched or is with somebody, then they said, then that is, you know, that's the husband and wife. Now, because being with Bhaumasur, so Krishna understood that and he immediately accepted. He knew the heart and he accepted all the 16,000. So, we can see that Krishna fulfills the desires of sincere people. But how it happens, when it happens, and we don't do this for the thinking that, okay, if I do this for such and so many times, then maybe in 3 or 4 years or 6 years, astrologically says my stars are very good in 2025. So if I just work till then, something will happen. No, if we do it, we have to do it. Krishna sees the intent. See, again, it's not the activity, it is also the consciousness. That's why Krishna consciousness is the word Krishna, Prabhupada wanted. So consciousness means that we are aware that Krishna is the supreme, but we also try our best to do it in a very, as selfless as possible. And whatever our plight is, if Krishna wants that, things that helps us to improve our material plight, he will do it. If Krishna says, because he's protecting us directly. But if he thinks that it's better for us to suffer, seemingly suffer materially, because that will fulfill our inner desire because we surrender to Krishna, he'll do it accordingly. So we've seen in Kunti's case, and they went through the whole life in front of him. So we can't judge that, and we should not even think when we do that. There's no bargaining there. (Clears throat) Even in Narottam Das Thakur's case, who was another great acharya in our parampara, very unusually great, really, really one of the most important ones, who, of course, whose bhajans we sing most often. He was born a kayastha, so in that time, the kayastha were considered, you know, low born, and the caste Brahmins were, you know, very upset that he was given such kind of, because he was such a great devotee, that he had, you know, Ganga Narayan Chakravarti, for instance, was a very great follower of Lord Chaitanya, who was a Brahmin, had taken initiation from him. So they never bothered about, they were not caste conscious, because they saw the quality of the person. So the other smarta Brahmas were very much against, and they harassed him. And a situation came when once they thought he is dead, and they put him on the pyre, Narottam Das Thakur, on the funeral pyre. And there also the smarta Brahmins came and started cursing him and saying all the blasphemous things about him, saying that now, okay, we're getting rid of him. And then suddenly they saw that there was a halo around, you know, he got a special garland around him. And then he said, he actually got up in front of them. And he just smiled and, you know, he just walked off. So all these Brahmins, smarta Brahmins then surrendered to him. And this is, we are talking only after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left, maybe 400 years ago. So, he went through such agony. We are saying it in few sentences, but you know, if you go through that, he never felt it. Haridas Thakur, he never felt it. But it was like a day in and day out, day in and day out. And through that, for many, many, many years, they lived that, but it just strengthened their Krishna consciousness. And they were oblivious to all these things. So, we are, all the time, we have to say, why am I hearing this? Why am I being told this? Why am I slowly thinking, we start appreciating that, why am I so fortunate that I am getting to, we are in the same lineage, that we are coming so close to these devotees. And if we have some doubts, we should go to Bhaktivedanta Research Center in Kolkata, which is a premier institute within ISKCON, which actually is preserving all the documents. You will see Haridas Thakur or even the Goswami's actual handwritings. So, you know, when you see something like that, like how you keep something, maybe your grandfather, when he was in school, and he might have signed in, and you have that memento, you know. So, this is like a few grandfathers ahead. I mean, we're talking of, so it is like relatable. It is like a few hundred years ago. You know, just go back maybe 12 or 15 generations and they were on the same level. Just that we don't know our great, great, great grandfather and beyond. But some people actually track it and they have it. You may have the many, some pandas who also keep a track of that family lineages. So that means, you know, so we are saying, talking of these people, when they were there, they were on this planet. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Gaurakishore Babaji Maharaj, they left this world in 1914, 1915. We're talking of just 100 odd years ago, the time when some of our fathers or grandfathers were actually on this planet. So, and they, what they did was something, you know, completely on a totally different level, spiritual level. So we can see that it is not something like a fairy tale, we're thinking about a story, you know. Even if we believe, but we may still think, yes, it happened in Krishna's time 5,000 years ago. No. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's time 500 years ago. Yes. We're talking of 100 years ago. 50 years ago. And if we come closer even to Prabhupada's time, Prabhupada's life, we can spend days just talking about it in the same principle. That he went through such difficulties, but he never, his moment-to-moment thinking was only how to serve Krishna. And in 1966, when he was starting the movement, everyone told him, just make it, it was a great thing he was doing anyway. He said, okay, make it International Society for God Consciousness. He said, no. Should be Krishna consciousness. Because people should know what is the truth. Krishna is, like we sing the Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma is glorifying Krishna and saying that you are the supreme Adipurush. So he wanted this to be established 55 years ago. So that was the courage. You know? So he took these decisions moment to moment. What to speak of how Radha Gopinath Mandir, if you go into the history of this temple, we wouldn't have any, I mean, it would not have come. Gopinath would not have come it was in a very painful situation, how it came through. It's not a matter to be discussed here, but there is a history to it. But had it not happened for so many years, and Radhanath Maharaj and others who came here into this place and were deliberated and then invited Gopinathji to come here in 1998, and then the other deities also came, we would not have had Gopinathji, and then we would only not be there. So if you see how Krishna plays his role, and we know the Juhu story. There are so many stories, but Juhu is one amazing one, because recently Giriraj Maharaj's book also on that. For so many years, the challenges that were there. So the insurmountable problems may be there, but what we do is, if we think that we are the controller of the solution, then that's a problem. But then we are only in anxiety that I'm not able to solve it. But Prabhupada never saw it that way. He said, you know, before he started the movement, he was sitting in the USA for 9 months, he was moving around, and he met this bus conductor on the bench, and he was sitting in there talking, and bus conductor is telling this after 30 years, in the 20 years. But Prabhupada is saying that, many temples, we'll be having many activities, so many centers, only time separates. So his feeling was, I have to do what I have to do. If Krishna wants, he'll fulfill it. And that's exactly what he said in his prayers also on the Jaladut, that I am a puppet in your hands. If you want to make my name is Bhakti Vedant. So if you want to fulfill the, that I give knowledge of Bhakti to the world, you know, it is entirely up to you. You can make me dance as you want. So he was not looking for there were certain goals to be followed, there were certain goals to be achieved, or Krishna should do that. He said he knew he could die also there. And he said, so he was already 70 when he went. So that's the attitude of our service, that we do what we have to do. So Chopati also, it was not like when Radha Gopinathji came, because the condition was that only if he comes, then we'll have a congregation of 50,000, 70,000. We don't even know how many there are. So like that. Now it has happened. That's Gopinathji's mercy. But when it came, it was the right thing to do against all the difficulties, and sincerely following it, and for many, many years, in a lot of poverty here also. Similarly, Juhu also. Similarly, the London, those three couples went to London when Prabhupada sent them. Nothing was there. But they, and we are talking of the, let's not assume that they are the success stories. Because, okay, Gopinathji came here and this is a success story. So many congregations came. Juhu is a success story. London is success. But there are dozens and dozens of services, dozens of centers in Prabhupada's time and later, which efforts were made in the same sincerity, which did not see the light of day, which just folded up. But that doesn't take it any less valuable than... So whether it manifests externally to eyes or whether it doesn't, we don't know. You know, it is in Krishna's eyes, and it may not be in our lifetime. So we may be... we are here... Like there are devotees who were there when Gopinathji came in 88, and then some of them, we know, from Chandrakant Bellare and others, they were counselors. But they left this planet, you know, within the first couple of years of the. So then they never saw all this. But nevertheless, for them, it was always the service that was needed. Take the Russian yatra, the whole Russian thing. Prabhupada went in 1971. Met this Kotovsky professor, and he just planted the seed through one devotee, Anand Shakti Prabhu. He just came there for 3 days. He was in his hotel room. I just spoke to him, a 19, 20-year-old boy. Prabhupada went away. Communist regime, impossible to even imagine how difficult it was. If you are found with a book, you will be executed, and nobody will know where you are. And this is not an exaggeration. It was a standard practice. Communism, the worst thing would be to be found with any religious literature. Now he took that, he translated into Russia, he was tortured, and then many of his initial followers, there were maybe 40, 50 of them who were put in mental camps, concentration camps, given injections, they were harassed to such an extent. In spite of that, and many of them died before the 1990 so-called wall broke, and there was a freedom which was given for religion. And then after 91, the whole explosion of religion took place. They were selling thousands of Bhagavad Gitas every day in Russian language. People were devouring, but that happened, you know, in the 90s. And this was in 72, 73, 75, 77. People were, so many devotees left. So do we say that those who did not see the light of, you know, to shine out, that they missed out something? No. Absolutely not. So, you know, externally we are not we do not relate to just the external situation. Otherwise, we'll miss the whole point. It is our the consciousness of the service that we do, what we do. The external is not in our hands. Now, if we take credit, oh, I am here and I was part of it, I'll be modestly saying that, okay, I'm not the only one, but I was part of it. Because of that, the temple came, this changed, so many things happened. In Juhu also, wherever. No. That's Krishna's mercy, because of Prabhupada, because of Maharaj, it happened here, because of many other devotees' effort. But many other places where the efforts were made, even in Maharashtra, so many centers are there now, so many centers were started and closed, or may not have worked, may have had difficulties. But that if it was done in a sincere purpose, it is on the same level as the efforts that were done here. So this is the point that we have, that the challenges will be there, like we see here, but how Arjun took the right choice of, he thought it over and he gave a complete understanding that I should not kill, in this case, because his Guru Maharaj's wife, Kripi, would be suffering, and he didn't want that, and they dealt with it in a very appropriate way later. So similarly, the choices that we make have to be based on how we move towards what is most valuable for us. What is most, and that valuable part will come due to our introspection and our lifestyle. So, if we are following a certain lifestyle, certain beliefs, we are reading, we are hearing philosophy, and we are convinced about it, then we have to introspect and try to link up various aspects of our life in a very intelligent and practical way. We shouldn't take extremes also, that now suddenly I want to be, you know, like Narasimha Prabhu and I will just give up and come. It doesn't work that way. But how we can, you know, gradually give up, if we have weaknesses, how we can try to minimize that weakness, if we can do something for others. You know, Krishna will give us that thought, even if you have no resources. You know, how in book distribution people are coming and giving volunteer service in the temple they are giving. So there are millions of ways if the desire is there. So that's how the service gets enriched. And when we start doing that, then that starts occupying various thoughts in our mind, so that it's ultimately there is a certain shelf space in our mind. So once we start occupying that, then other things become, then we are very happily engaged. The mind, if it's idle, or if it's then it will always think about, brood about, you know, what is happening to me, when my neighbor is doing this, my erstwhile partner is doing better than me, you know, everything. It's always looked at a competitive level. So that's why to get away from it, we have to go into the absolute, into the pure, into a realm of world which we are not exposed to. This is a world which we're getting exposed to, this reality, the spiritual world. So if you see it in that light, then it is whatever is happening to us can't be worse than any of so many stories that we hear in Bhagavatam. I mean, there's not even a comparison. But we feel that because we feel we are so important. So that's how we can go on and enrich our lives. You know, and then slowly, you know, we actually become peaceful, contented, happy. That's because that's very important to develop detachment. We have to become contented and accept where we are. Make efforts within and then recognize if the effort is working or not working. If it's not working, then we do something else, but not be dejected. So we make an effort, but accept that we are not the controller of the success. So we'll end there today. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srimad Prabhupada ki jai.
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.